Welcome to Beeline, your 95 BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.
Kia ora and welcome to the first episode of Beeline, 95 BFM's new news podcast. Beeline aims to bridge the gap between young people and decision makers through youth-centered interviews focused on youth issues. The upcoming episodes will feature a range of topics affecting young people in our everyday lives, starting off with public transport. As one of the largest public transport user groups, it's important that young people are represented in decision-making around the future of public transport developments in the city. One source of feedback that's popped up recently is the explosion of activity around public transport on social media. To start our discussion about youth and public transport, I spoke to Robert, also known as Let Him Drive on Instagram and TikTok, about what kind of work he does.
So I used to be a bus driver. Right now I'm just studying content creation and social media marketing. But yeah, I had a good time driving a bus and it worked out pretty well, with the content creation, right?
What inspired you to start making content?
There was this page called I Effing Love the 70, right? And I looked at it and so many people were following this page. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, oh, come on, man. let's get a bus driver to make a page. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
I made one video and Auckland Transport, 24 hours later or something like that, they posted it on their Instagram story. And I was just kind of like, wow, this was great. It inspired me to just make more.
And you took off quite quickly, right? Do you think there was a market for that, unique perspective, as you mentioned, from a bus driver, giving people an insight into what that life was like?
I kind of felt people were kind of curious about...
Like a peek behind the curtains.
They were kind of curious about what life was like as a bus driver, or how can this guy make content on the bus if he's driving? why is he on his phone? Nah, I don't know. It's good to just do stuff on your breaks. And I mean, it is what you see. There's nothing really behind the curtain, right? What you look at when you go on a bus, it is what you see. There's nothing extra about it. I'm just being honest.
I think young people are generally pretty optimistic about public transport, pretty excited to take public transport. New Zealand's obviously quite a car-based country. Do you think people are, what's the balance there?
I don't know if they're somewhat excited, but it's good if they want to they don't have a car, obviously, and it's good to have
people taking public transport, that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah. And I guess if we're thinking about what you do, obviously creating content, and that's had massive appeal with young people, what more could Auckland Transport do, to appeal to those young markets that you've captured?
Yeah, just look at what the other transport pages are doing, New South Wales, I think it is, right? They're so creative. They are really creative, right? And they know that they're targeting Gen Z with all these videos, just trying to make it funny and stuff.
Yeah, what kind of posts are they doing?
They're just some of them are skits from what I recall.
Yeah, and engaging with the trends.
It's not just the I'ma be honest, right? It's, you got your professional side, but it's also good to have your connecting side, right?
Exactly.
Connecting with people on a human level, right? So I think that would be good if they bring in it doesn't even have to be skits, just videos that are lighthearted.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
A bit more fun. Exactly, exactly.
Right. Yeah. And, what's the benefit to getting more young people passionate about public transport? I guess, what are you trying to get out of it? And what do you think you're contributing to that sort of thing?
It's good if I can somehow change the perception a little bit about public transport, but it's out of my control.
On changing the perspective, what do you think you're contributing to that? And what do you think, the perspective might have been before you started? And do you think it's improved at all? Or
I think that, I've had people message me saying that they'd like taking the bus more because of what I've shown them. Or even the train. I don't drive a train, but I think people just want to feel like they are not taking a boring travel.
Yeah.
You know, like they want to be reminded that, you know, it's nothing to be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Taking public transport, right? Oh, the words are coming to me now, right? There's nothing to be ashamed of to take public transport. That's the number one message, really, that I wanted to show with the content.
And there's a strong community element to public transport as well. There's a strong community that's built around you and all of these other bus accounts on Instagram. Do you think there's sort of links with that community, and do you think that community is important?
Yeah, like that. You mean like how there's a whole bunch of like bus fans in a community,
yeah,
and they're like talking about buses and stuff? Yeah, wow, I didn't know that existed. And then, you know, until later on. And wow, it is real.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, bus enthusiast. I never heard that before. Yeah, there's a whole community of people who are completely enthusiastic about public transport. And it's kind of like it rubs off on you. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Like, because for me, when I started, it's just a bus, you know, like it's just my job. But yeah, it rubs off on you when you hang out with like people who are like really enthusiastic about these things, right? And I'm thinking to myself, the passion is something I understood later on. And it's just so good that, like, because there's people passionate about cars, there's people passionate about, you know, airplanes.
Yeah.
And so it's good. Like, it's to have people passionate about buses, trains, and ferries. I love it.
100%. Yeah. If you wanted to leave people, I guess, with one final message about, you know, young people and public transport, and what would that be?
My one message would be just don't be ashamed to take public transport, right? Because everybody is like, oh, like, you know, everybody wants a car, and like, I'm talking about the young people specifically, right? Yeah. And just know that bus drivers are actually, you know, they're genuinely nice people, and, you know, don't be afraid to like talk to them. That's all, really.
After talking to Let Him Drive, I also spoke to the I Fucking Hate the 394 account owner to see what kind of perspective a more critical account might have gathered.
It's pretty much just focused around short form comedy or entertainment videos.
Yeah.
That are, I guess, relatable to people within Auckland and New Zealand in general. Yeah, just common memes and like interaction with the community.
Yeah, yeah. And what inspired you to start making that kind of content?
The 70 account.
Yeah.
I think everyone knows the 70. Yeah, he was kind of just gaining popularity around the time. And I think me and my mates were just sitting on the bus one day, stuck in traffic for like 40 minutes. I thought, oh yeah, we can do something like this. And,
yeah.
And it was mostly just based around like our experience. It was just going to be like a inside joke thing. And then within like a few weeks, it just
completely
took off.
Exploded. Yeah. Yeah. And do you think there's a reason why, I mean, that kind of content is popular among young people in Auckland?
I think it's just relatable. Like, there's a lot of issues with taking public transport. Like, everyone can agree that it can be better. I think the bad experiences outshine the good experiences, even though, like, it's not often that there's a bad experience, but when it is, it stands out a lot more.
Yeah, I wanted to get into the good experiences a little bit before the bad. Why do you think, or do you think at all, young people are excited to take public transport in Auckland?
I think there's definitely enthusiasm. I think in the last 20 years, I mean, there's obviously been a huge uptake within Auckland and New Zealand in general. There's probably a lot more enthusiasm compared to the older generations.
Yeah, and what kind of things about public transport, you know, are exciting to take, or is it just a matter of convenience?
I think the main thing is convenience. I mean, you can offer a service to anyone, but if it's not a reliable service, or if it doesn't go where you want it to go, then people just aren't going to use it.
Yeah, and I suppose that's getting a bit into the criticisms. I mean, that's one of the things your account is known for, obviously. But what are some of, I guess, the criticisms that young people are having about public transport at the moment?
The main thing that I always hear is reliability.
Mm.
Like, I just posted a question last night, like, what's the main thing? And that's the common answer.
Yeah. If you go into that a little bit more, like reliability around what?
Oh, so I mean, like, the main thing is like frequency.
Mm.
Will the service actually turn up? Will it get to where I need to go on time? I mean, like, even for this interview, I left like an hour early just in case, because I don't want to like be late. So it's not practical if you have to leave an hour early every time just to make sure you're going to be on time.
Yeah. And then, like, what kind of improvements could Auckland Transport make to appeal more to young people and address these issues that people are facing?
They're doing pretty well with, like, advertising. I think they target young people on social media pretty well. I think more of just advertising the service, actually explaining why it's an alternative. Like, not just, oh, you can take the bus, but it can be quicker if you go, like, here's the bus lanes, it's going to be quicker than driving.
Do you think, I guess, there's any more services or anything more Auckland Transport can do to really push? I mean, obviously New Zealand is quite a car-centric country, right? Do you think there's more they could do to promote it as an alternative, like you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it all comes down to funding.
Mm.
If they had more funding, you could do all sorts. But basic things like reallocation of lanes to prioritise public transport. The other one, I'm going to use the B word, Aucklanders don't like, but bike lanes.
Mm.
Especially for like children under like probably around 8 to 16. I mean, if most of them were on bikes, the school traffic would cut down significantly.
Yeah, 100%.
And that just improves travel for both people on public transport and the drivers that need to drive.
And if you had to give, I guess, one message to Auckland Transport for them to take on and to think about when they're developing their policies, either towards young people or towards things in general moving forward, what would that be?
I think just explaining the alternatives, I guess.
Yeah.
I mean, you could, like, go within schools, hear perspective from younger people, because a lot of time when they ask for feedback, it's all the old people that have nothing better to do.
Right, yeah.
They're just sitting at home, and it's always a complaint, and it's usually, let's go back to the old way, because when I was a kid, it was better. But, I mean, you could, like, go to primary schools, high schools, and I'm sure most kids would be enthusiastic to get out of class for half an hour to fill out a feedback form or something.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So I think more younger perspective, but going out of their way to actually get it and not just waiting for them to come.
Mm. Now that I'd gathered some information around youth perspectives on public transport, it was time to speak to some experts and officials. We talked with Let 'em Drive about how some people felt anxious to take public transport because it's boring or not cool, giving an insight into the stereotypes and connotations around public transport. To discuss further, I spoke to Mohsen Mohammadzadeh, Senior Lecturer in the Faculty of Engineering and Design at the University of Auckland. So in one of the previous interviews, we discussed how some young people were feeling anxious or embarrassed to take public transport compared to like cars, driving cars. Where do these ideas come from?
That's a very good question, though. You know, for at least since last century, when the car introduced to our society, especially after 40, become quite available for the middle class, car, it's not just a tool, you know, just going for a help us to move from point A to B. It's become part of our society, and we name it social values. So, yeah, it has some values in addition to the functionality. So it was a kind of all the time promoted as a symbol of the freedom for people. You know, if you look at the movies and the, you know, the way media, you know, cover it and somehow promote it. So it's created kind of a lifestyle and perception. And it's a kind of generate the kind of the value, and especially in the car dependent cities like us, you know, it's embedded, you know, in the society now.
And how big is car centrism, I guess, in New Zealand, right, compared to other countries internationally? Obviously America is one of the ones that comes to mind, but
it's a good question. The thing is that actually we are very car dependent, you know. The latest I think it's a couple of days back, it was a report by the State of the City mentioned that actually we are one of the most car dependent cities in the compared cities in the world.
Wow.
And one of the reasons is that the model we start develop our cities, especially Auckland, from 50s and 60s, it's very low dense, you know, suburban type of things,
right.
And we give up the kind of the European model, which was quite intensified around the trams and trains there.
Yeah.
So that kind of the model around development somehow imposed a kind of car dependent city. So and it become like a norm in the society. And I'm not surprised when I hear that the young ones, you know, they feel that if they are using public transport is a symbol of the poverty. Because if you want to use public transport here, you know, it's expensive.
Yeah.
And also it's not coverage, you know, all part of that. And frequency reliability is an issue. And people, they have no other option actually using. Sometimes, with all respect to the Auckland Transport and the colleagues working in that area, they try actually to implement the good plans and policies and increase, you know, the number of the people using public transport. But still,
Yeah,
it's a problem.
Yeah. What more do you think, I guess, Auckland Transport could do to address the, you know, the issues around, you know, reach, as you mentioned, and independence and those sorts of things?
It's not the only Auckland Transport, I think. Mm. It's the way we plan our cities.
Right.
You know, obviously, as a service providers, Auckland Transport, they have their own type of limitations.
100%,
you know? Yeah. I'm a planner, but I have engineering background. So the thing is that when you look to the transportation, especially providing public transport, it's quite expensive for a city, you know. So the frequency of the, and the quality requires a lot of investment. But when you have a very low-dense cities like Auckland, the cost of the operation and maintaining the level of the service is huge. Mm. And taxpayers should pay for it, isn't it?
Right, yeah.
So Auckland Transport, I think, doing quite well, you know, but the problem here, I can say, it's more about the way we plan our cities and develop our cities. Most of the time, when we are facing a problem regarding housing, we just expand our cities, a greenfield development, which increase the cost of providing the service, including public transport. So they can do something, but it's, you know, as planner, I see that from the planning perspective, it's a problem.
Yeah, right. In one of the previous interviews, we also talked about some of the community associated with mm-hmm. public transport, right? And that, you know, environment where you're with other people and that sort of social atmosphere. Do people lose out on that a little bit with driving and that sort of thing?
Yes and no. The thing is that people sometimes they don't have an option though. The good example, if you look at the places like neighborhoods like Grey Lane or Ponsonby, used to, you know, Pacific people, Maori people used to live there. So through the transition and the dynamics of the cities, you know, some people used to live in that kind of areas for that particular communities, for example, they shift or pushed to the kind of the outer suburbs because the inner suburbs become quite expensive. But still, if you look, there are churches and the facilities are still, you know, in that kind of neighborhood. So if you look to the kind of the Sundays, they are coming back to their visiting using that kind of facilities. But we don't have a public transport for them. So that I cannot say that there's a community losing that. Mm. We don't provide enough facilities and alternative, you know, for these ones. And it's also it's the same thing for the young ones as well. I did investigation about students' travel behavior a couple of years back. And some students, you know, around more than 70%, they said that they are using public transport commuting to the university. But when I asked them actually what they will do when they graduate, they said potentially they move to the car. There's a reason because, you know, most of the time it's an opportunity cost. If you want to travel from your home to the place, there is no, you know, kind of the direct, you know, public transport. So people, they have no other option. It takes sometimes longer time. And then when you look at the kind of the opportunity costs regarding to the, and this kind of a trade-off convince people actually to use private. And consider that, as I mentioned that in the beginning, you know, using car and ownership of car is a kind of the valued in the society as well.
We've seen like cost also as a barrier to a lot of young people getting into public transport. We talk about the opportunity cost on time, but also the monetary cost. If we're thinking about people, you know, living quite far out from the city, as you mentioned, as people are getting pushed out from city centres, what are the kind of costs and how is that impacting people in their lives?
The thing is that especially, you know, if you look at the inner city suburbs, they are quite expensive, especially the people disadvantaged ones or the lower incomes that are pushed out. And to create a kind of discrimination here, you know, and access to the service, different type of services like education, healthcare. Most of the time, they should pay more for traveling.
Mm.
And also, it's not just the money, also the time, opportunity cost here.
Yeah.
Which means, especially for younger ones, if they cannot afford to live in the, you know, in CBD
or
university.
Sort of thing. Yeah.
So it will be quite expensive for them for them to come and, you know, and use the services. So it will impact on their decision actually to continue their education or using the services we have. So it's a huge barrier, I think. Mm. It's a kind of the, because transportation is not cheap, it's quite expensive.
Yeah.
And somehow it's one of the problems we have. Policymakers, planners, most of the time, they are considering the middle class, upper middle class, you know, needs. So the needs of the disadvantaged, economic disadvantaged group overlooked here, and including young ones.
Mm.
And you know, and the other dimension is quite interesting. Even if they want to use car, the young ones, the process of getting the license is quite expensive as
Yeah, yeah.
So we have a group of young ones that are using cars, but they don't have license, driving licenses here. So I think somehow we need to think about this, how we can address it. And because transportation means access to opportunity, and it's quite crucial for the young generation actually to have those kind of opportunities. Otherwise, they cannot improve their economic health and their position as a human. I think one of the most important thing, you know, when we look to the youth, I can see that actually they want to have options.
Yeah, 100%.
And they really like to go. And because, again, my investigation about people's travel behavior show me that actually the new generation, they are concerned more about the sustainability, the way they, the impacts they have in the environment and society. But still, we don't provide alternative, you know, feasible alternative for them. So new generation should have options.
If people want to find more of your work or look at some of the stuff you've done, where should people look?
I have a couple of the publications that are you know, open access, and I publish a couple of the reports for MBIE, you know, especially. So people, you know, they can read it. But they, if they want to read some of the articles I write for the journals, obviously, I'm happy to provide it for people if they want.
Finally, I took all these discussion points and feedback directly to Auckland Transport, where I spoke to the Director of Public Transport and Active Modes, Stacey van der Putten. I began by asking her what kind of work her job entails.
I'm the Director of Public Transport and Active Modes here at AT. So that sort of encompasses, you know, all our trains, our buses, our ferries, from what I would call following the RPTP, which is the Regional Public Transport Plan, in terms of development through to implementation, managing the contracts, optimising the network, measuring the network, and walking and cycling and how that fits into our transport system as well. But that also is a bit broader. So it's not just when we say active modes, it is walking and cycling, and well, we call it walking and wheeling. But it's also in terms of how we engage with the likes of schools and the TravelWise program, and how we get kids safely to school, and walking school buses, and working with businesses in terms of travel demand management, and, you know, what their travel options are, and helping support them with that.
And so what kind of support or policies are Auckland Transport implementing to promote or improve services specifically for young people?
Obviously, trying to enhance their night network is a big one. So when we come under cost pressures, one of the things that we're always up against in public transport is trying to fit within our budget constraints and keep services attractive. You know, and that means sometimes that we do have to do these network optimization exercises, and we always will, and we should. We should see what's working and what's not. But of course, when it comes to the likes of nighttime services, they are going to have less people on them.
Naturally,
yeah. So we're always challenged in terms of making sure that we keep them going and actually put more on in order to, you know, help people get to where they need to be at night. Because that's one of the things that with public transport, if you don't have good frequency, people won't use it, right? Frequency is freedom. And so if you've got a bus that is during the day, it's every 15, 20 minutes, and then during the night it goes to hourly, it all of a sudden doesn't become a great option, right?
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be hanging out there at a bus stop trying to get home.
Especially at night, yeah.
Totally. And so one of those things that we're sort of looking at, and actually have some enhancements coming later this year, is that nighttime economy piece. How do we help people get to where they need to be safely by improving some of the frequency on those services?
Cost is the prime discussion topic, I mean, everywhere at the moment, right?
Yeah.
Across all sectors, especially for students. And while public transport services obviously take money to run and cost money to run, what kind of efforts are being taken to make public transport more affordable?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things, and they definitely do not solve all the problems, yeah? And so one of those things was the mayor got behind and backed a fare cap. And so over the last year, there was a $50 a week fare cap implemented. That's on what I'd call a standard hop fare, an adult fare.
Right.
And so that is one thing. Mm-hmm. So you're never going to pay more than that in terms of if you're using bus, trains, as well as inner harbour ferries for the week. Other things that we've implemented is, of course, we have concessions. So concessions for high school students, children, as well as tertiary students. And so one of those things sort of ongoing is how can we look to improve those or improve utilisation of them. We're currently in this stage where we are struggling to introduce more what I'd call products into the system, because we're obviously moving towards a new system and a national system in terms of that ticketing side, which means we are limited in terms of what we can do. other things, obviously FareShare, which is a great new product that we've introduced over the last few years and is really starting to get momentum. And that is when businesses actually invest in their, you know, staff being able to use public transport and help support them to travel and sustainably and subsidise the public transport use. So that is getting really good, you know, steam behind it now, and more businesses are joining on with that. And earlier this year, you may remember this too, when we had our annual fare review, one of the things we did do was take a fresh look at what is our fare strategy going ahead. And we do know that for people that live on the extremities of Auckland, it costs a lot more to use public transport, right? And so we wanted to make sure that we made it more attractive for people who had to travel longer distances. So we consolidated those fare zones. And so that makes it much more attractive and much more financially feasible in order to be able to take those longer routes more often. And so that's a real benefit to those people that live further out.
And a lot of in some of the earlier interviews, we talked a little bit about advertising for Auckland Transport. And on social media, the kinds of like skit or comedy content put out by public transport organisations in other countries or in other cities, is this something that Auckland Transport might look into in the future? I guess expanding the social media presence in that sort of space?
Well, we've definitely been doing more social media the last few years. Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's about, you know, what I'd love to see more of is user-generated content in
100%.
Here. Yeah, because we got limited resources. We can't, you know, go out and do lots of, you know, flashy stuff in terms of advertising. But the team do a lot and do a lot in a limited budget in order to be able to make sure that people know about public transport, how to access it, but also to put a little bit more fun into it in terms of that. So you will see... There is more of that flavour in terms of that, and that consistent sort of theme around the marketing presence with public transport. So that's definitely grown legs in recent years, and there is, you know, great content. And there was some ads about Mix Your Go recently, earlier this year, and they were really, really well received. Yeah. And they had humour, and they were fun, and that was part of a broader campaign, and which has been really successful. The other thing that I think we've noticed in recent years is the user generated content. So, you know, all the bus pages on Instagram, and they are cool, right?
Yeah.
And there's no better content than the user generated stuff, because, you know, people get obviously quite creative with their content, and in terms of that, what seeing that competition between bus routes and you know, different customers, you know, getting on board with it and having a lot of fun and banter. And so that's been really cool for public transport too.
Moving on to the CRL, for young people especially, CRL development's been going on for me personally, for almost all of the time I've been taking public transport. Yeah. And for many young people, you know, they've been seeing the impact of those CRL developments. What's the timeline on the CRL and young people seeing this payoff for something that's been building up for almost all of the time they've been using public transport?
I know, some would have started high school and finished high school and it's still not there. I totally get that. And it's next year.
Yep.
And so that's obviously really exciting
because,
you know, us like other people have been going, when's this, you know, coming? And of course it's a really incredibly complex project, which is not just about the tunnels. It's not just about the tunnels. It's not just about the new stations. It is a huge integrator and efficiency gain for the network as a whole. And so we're really excited about it and what it means, and also to provide that consistency of train services back to Auckland, because it's been incredibly disruptive for our customers, as well as, you know, obviously around the areas where construction has taken place. So next year, some stage next year.
Yeah.
And so I think that'll be a bit of a game changer, particularly when you think about the difference where Britomart is now, and there's no other what core station within the central area, right? So it's sort of going to really change how people get around central Auckland, particularly with downtown still with Britomart, but then you've got Midtown, and then you've got uptown with Karahanga Hapi station. So I think that's really cool, and they're beautiful stations, and I think Aucklanders will be really proud of what's there for them, and it's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be really exciting for public transport, and you've got to remember that as a city, we started from a really low base. We've been a very car-centric country, everybody knows that, and so building up public transport from a low base, and it's hard to see the progress sometimes, but an incredible amount has been done, particularly over the last decade, to get to where we are today. And we're going to need to keep going, right? It's not like a start and stop thing. You've got to continue to grow and adapt and change and invest to help the city flow.
Yeah, I want to talk about that car centrism a little bit later, but I just want to ask about on the CRL. A lot of people will hear about the CRL and they'll see the stuff about the CRL, but it's usually like announcements, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. What practical impact is it going to have for like students coming into commuting or people just in their everyday lives?
Well, I mean, the real big efficiency gain is in the West. Mm. Yeah, so people travelling in the West from a time perspective are going to get that huge benefit. And so from Henderson into Te Wai Horatu is 35 minutes, which is a huge difference to what you'll ever be able to do during peak in a motor vehicle. And that consistency, I think one thing people want is that reliability and consistency of travel time. That'll give us that. And so that's a really big gain. The other things in terms of there actually hasn't been what I'd call a really good public transport connection from the likes of Alice Lee to Kay Road, right? And so measuring that off the alternate now, which is a bus to be able to do that, I think it's a 12-minute time saving. And so there's all these gains that people don't necessarily know because they're not doing those journeys right now because there's not the viable options or it's a roundabout sort of option for them. The other thing is you've got this huge connection that goes from west to east. So right now, if you're going from west to east, you have to get off a train at Britomart, jump on the eastern line and go that way. So you've got that continuous sort of travel through there. So from across town, across Auckland sort of perspective, you're going to have this massive efficiency gain with that. And people, in terms of just being able to go, hey, they might live in New Lynn as an example, but I really want to go to Sylvia Park. And you've got that direct trip, which is really awesome. And so it's going to change the way I think people think about it. The problem is making people aware that that's for them. There's new stuff there. It can help them get around. That's going to be the thing that we need to sort of double down on. So something has changed and it's, you know, there's more options for you now. I think the young people know this, though. They find it a lot quicker than potentially other user groups do.
Back to the car centrism thing. In some of our interviews, we talked about how, you know, young people are feeling pressure to start driving and how that's a big part about being a person in Auckland especially. How is that something that Auckland Transport is, I guess, tackling with what work you guys do and what things you're putting out?
Yeah, that's a tricky question. I mean, it's making sure that people know what other options there are. You know, we can't tell people don't drive. We don't want to do that. As someone who has two teenage sons, I know that, you know, they've got really, one has a license, other one's yet of age to be able to have one. But, you know, that was really important to him. And so I think that's part of our DNA as Kiwis, and that's something that we've got to look deeper at. And how do we make public transport a reality and something that people want to use as part of who we are as a city? Because the fact is, if people keep doing what they're doing and we get more people here and they keep getting in their cars, it's not going to be a great experience for people to be able to move about, right?
Yeah.
So we need to make public transport and active modes a really attractive option for people to be able to use. And that's what we've got to do. Mm. Yeah. Because the alternate's not, that can't be our future. Really can't be our future. We need to be a grown-up city. We've got a lot of people in Auckland, so making sure that we make public transport attractive, it's not optional. We have to, you know, keep on improving it.
Buses and public transport appealing to all demographics of people because of, you know, trying to reduce emissions, especially from driving, that sort of thing. Mm. And we've seen, you know, an increase in electric buses across the city. We've seen some new double-deckers. How is the process of electrifying the fleet going? And what's it looking like moving forward?
Yeah, cool question. And so, look, we started that journey back in, gosh, it must have been 2017, 2018, and we actually procured a couple of electric buses ourselves. We don't own the buses, our operators do, but in order to get the confidence of the technology and test it and understand it, we bought a few ourselves and had our operators sort of operate them, collected the data, looked at the data, and then slowly have progressed, and we have what we call a low emissions bus roadmap in order to get to a full electric fleet. Our board then made a decision in 2021 that would only procure from then electric fleet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and actually that probably started about a year earlier by default in terms of the cycle of new fleet. Well, at least 6 months before that, because the confidence in the technology had reached a point where people were like, and operators particularly who were investing in these assets, had reached that point. So it's been a learning lesson. There's been lessons along the way, particularly when it comes to charging infrastructure and what's needed with charging infrastructure. But the confidence in the technology has grown, and now we're rapidly expanding that. And so over the course up until 2030, and 2035 is kind of a hard line in terms of having all electric fleet in their buses, but we'll reach that earlier on the trajectory that we're at.
If you had like one thing to say, a lot of young people are quite optimistic about public transport and excited about it, but they also feel a little bit hesitant towards, you know, because of things you've mentioned around efficiency or reliability. If you had one thing to say to these people about thinking about public transport moving forward and thinking about it as an option, what would that be?
Constantly looking about how we can do better, and let us know what you think, in terms of that. We're always keen to hear feedback and looking about how we can improve it. We know from looking at our data and the feedback, obviously reliability, journey time reliability is hugely important. So is frequency, making sure there's good frequency. Sometimes people don't understand that. And when I say some people, sometimes when we're looking at decisions and we're saying, hey, we're going to upgrade this route to be one of our frequent routes between 7 and 7, and actually we want to go to 10 p.m. or midnight, people go, well, why would you do that? There's not people using those services now. And they're not using the services now because they're not there.
100%.
And so some of these things, you know, are challenging conversations. But the thing is, we're building for the future. We're building for the youth. That's why we're doing this. And we love that we're doing it for the youth, really, because we always say, and particularly in schools, that these people are our future commuters. You know, information that you have and share and how you're travelling and how you're feeling is important to us because it helps us with our decision making and shaping what we're going to do next. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Thank you to all of our guests. Let 'em Drive, I Fucking Hate the 394, the University of Auckland's Mohsen Mohammadzadeh, and Auckland Transport's Stacey van der Putten. Beeline will be back next week with an episode discussing how different news organisations make content for young people in Aotearoa. Ka kite!
Thanks for listening to Beeline, your 95BFM news podcast, delivering straight up news.